What's happening? This is Scott Van Pelt. Welcome to SV Pod. My conversation with Nick Saban from SportsCenter after the Tide won the title for the sixth time since he's been in Tuscaloosa. That's his seventh. He's the all-time winningest college football coach in terms of national championships. Also, playoff preview, and Steve gives us a geography lesson about Canada. Also, we talk Bills, Browns fans, who can drink more. And we're on opposite sides of that. Important content. You know what's up. Also want to remind everyone to check out the Woj podcast. Nobody covers the NBA like Adrian Wojnarowski. So if the NBA is your thing, check it out, download, and subscribe to the Woj Pod and SV Pod wherever you get your podcast. Greeting you from Washington, D.C. with Stanford Steve. I'm Scott Van Pelt. Day after the national championship game, our conversation from SportsCenter with Nick Saban in just a bit. Alabama rolls over Ohio State, ending this, I mean, it's cliche to say a year unlike anything we've seen. And you think about what players and coaches and everybody associated with the support staff had to endure. And it was a lot to get to some sort of a finish line. And they did. And in the end, these brand names, Alabama and Ohio State, I mean, it's the best thing you could ask for on paper. The problem is Alabama did to Ohio State, Steve, what Ohio State does to, I'll say it, like Maryland or Michigan State or somebody that's just not as good as them. And Ohio State's got 4 and 5 stars all over the field, and they didn't have a chance. Now, they had a couple of defensive linemen out. They lost Sermon on the first series of the game. So there's a bit of built-in excuse. I'm going to go ahead and say after what I saw that had they had their full complement of linemen and had Sermon stayed healthy, team from T-Town still celebrating a title. Do you think the same?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They showed enough. I thought Nick was interesting in the idea. You heard, you know, Herbie alluded to it in the broadcast, but you know, they had guys banged up too. Mechie wasn't 100%. Guys in the O-line, you know, they lost Dickerson.
Yeah, he's maybe the best O-lineman they've got. He and Leatherwood are both awesome, but I mean, that's the center. That's the guy in the middle, man.
Yeah. I mean, they got through Notre Dame without him, but you know, everybody, you know, Reese said it. I mean, I think he said it 5 straight weeks on the show when we had him once the ranking started. And it was just the idea of Ohio State's going to get in. They're going to be fresh. Is it going to be a benefit? Yes. Are they good enough to win the whole thing? Yes. But they got caught, you know, getting nicked up too. I mean, there's no excuse. You know, the better team won. We know that. It's just we're in this day and age where we're getting, you know, a little, you know, spoiled, I would think. We got games back, and now we want really good games. And if you look at the history of the playoff, it ain't happening.
Not a lot.
It ain't happening.
Nope. And we're also in an age, Steve, where nothing can just be a standalone. It can't just be that Alabama was a lot better than Ohio State.
Nope.
It has to be what?
Is this the best team ever? Is this Nick Saban's best team ever after the break?
What would the point spread be between 2020 Alabama and 2019 LSU? Find out next.
That was Steve. Steve got involved with the tease. But that's what it is. That's what the segment would be. Coming up next, you won't believe what the spread would be between 19 LSU and 20 Alabama. It's exhausting.
What about 18 Clemson?
Shut up! 2019 LSU was a juggernaut. They went to Tuscaloosa and they kicked Alabama's ass. The final wasn't as close as the game was. They gave it to them. Gave it to them. That team was absurd. And what Burrow and that team did was absurd. They could have scored 100 against Oklahoma in the college playoff semi had they chosen to. 100. And they just stopped because they were bored. And then, you know, the game with Clemson, they were kind of – Burrow was slow to get going, but in the end, they gave it to them too. Now, I'm not saying that LSU team is better than this Alabama team. I'm saying I don't know. And it's okay to go, how the hell do I know? I don't. This Bama team, Steve, played in an all-SEC schedule. Then they played Notre Dame, and then they played Ohio State. There'll never be a schedule on paper that looks quite like that. I mean, 9 SEC and then Notre Dame, Ohio State. And they smashed both of them too. No crowds, That's a massive game changer. That makes road games nothing, really, for the most part. So what I'm saying here, with as is always the case with me, more words than is necessary, there's really no way to reasonably compare 20 Alabama with any other college team because there's never been a year like that. Is that okay to say?
Would 2020 Alabama beat the Jags?
This year's Jags?
Yeah.
Come on. You know the answer to that. A lot of guys on Alabama's team will be in the NFL. Every guy on Jacksonville's team is in the NFL.
Correct.
Never, ever have that conversation if you want to sound smart. If you want to sound dumb, go ahead and ask that and mean it. I know you don't.
No.
When it was done, Nick Saban passed Bear Bryant. I'll just say it. He's the best there's ever been in college football. And what's interesting to me, and my mom pointed this out, she says, you know, I thought you asked good questions. Stunner, my mom, she thought I asked good questions. She said, he doesn't really play, like, show you a lot. And I said, well, the funny thing is that people often are complimentary of the conversations Nick and I have had, particularly when he was in his house in May. And I think he showed a human side that he typically keeps close to the vest. But I said, you know, Mom, he's like the method actor, Daniel Day-Lewis. They say he just doesn't break character. And the thing about both he and Bill Belichick is they stay in their lane and in their role almost exclusively. Now, he was smiling when he said a bunch of this, but you're right. I said, Mom, you're right. If you're waiting for him to do a cartwheel,
oh,
like that's just not his, that's not in his DNA. What is in his DNA is titles. Now 7 of them. Here's the conversation we had on SportsCenter with the all-time winningest championship college football coach, Nick Saban. The destination's the same, but obviously this journey's different. And I know you're about process down there, but this process, what you and your teams had to go through daily, weekly, from summer to now, how do you best explain to the rest of us what that was like?
Well, I think this team, I told this team in the very beginning when we knew we were going to have a lot of disruptions that the team that handles the disruptions the best is the team that's going to have the best chance to be successful in the end. And this team really did it. And if you talk to the players, they actually say that a lot of the disruptions and a lot of the things that we weren't able to do, whether it was spring practice or summer conditioning or whatever it was, actually made the team closer. And we became a better team because of some of the disruptions, which I was actually surprised to hear. But certainly they demonstrate that in the way they compete and play.
I went back and looked. It was May when you came on with me, and we visited about the idea of being home with family. And I think people were struck, Nick, by just, you know, the joy of that, how much you got out of something you and your coaches never would have had the opportunity to do, being home with them. But when you got back to this season and you got back to be with this team, would it be reasonable to say that there was a joy in coaching this year and an appreciation for what the chance you got that maybe you might not have had otherwise?
Well, I think sometimes when something gets taken away from you,
yeah,
we all have a lot more appreciation for it when we get it back. And there was no question that was the case this year with this team. And I think that may have been some of the what made this team closer, because they realized that, hey, we may not play this year. We may not be together. They didn't know what for sure the future was going to bring. And I think when they all did come back, they really appreciated that we had an opportunity to play and wanted to do all they could to have success, and they certainly did it in a very fine fashion.
I know it's about team, not one guy, but as you saw the highlight we were showing, clearly Devontae was featured in it, and he's special, he's unique, this night was. I just wonder how those words describe this young man who, as we know, he could have gone for that paycheck, but decided to stick around, and he is rewarded with a title. How special, how unique is that young man?
Well, he's a unique person in the kind of leadership that he has, the kind of competitive spirit he has, and I think Smitty would be successful in any endeavor that he wanted to try, you know, in his life. He's obviously going to have a career as a football player, but I think he created a lot of value for himself by coming back. I think sometimes people don't realize how much value guys create going from the second to, you know, sure, maybe a top 10 pick or whatever, which the way he competed and played this year, and he's the ultimate team guy. I mean, he sets a great example for his teammates. He cares about his teammates, sets a great example for him every day. And I tell you, he's hard to beat. I mean, I just love that guy.
I bet you do.
Speaking of creating value, coaches that come and coach under you, we got one down the corner. My alma mater, Lox, is here at Maryland, who was where Sark was. And, of course, Sark's going now to Texas. I just wonder what you'd have to say about the last script that he drew up and the execution of that script, but what he had in terms of a game plan for your team tonight on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, Sark's done a great job for us all year long. And absolutely did a really, really good job. You know, some people would have a difficult time taking the head coaching job at Texas the day or two after we, beat Notre Dame and then stay focused on what they needed to do. But it shows his appreciation for the players. And I think that's something that I really admire in him, because that's something that I've always, you know, tried to really make the most important thing in being a coach, that you care about the players and you want to do what's best for the players. And I wanted to win this game tonight for our players because of what they had accomplished and what they'd done all year long. And it was really special for me to see them have success in a game tonight.
When I spoke to LeBron this year after the Lakers won, I referenced having a chance to speak to two different people in my career who won a lot. One of them was you and the other was Tiger Woods. And the idea, Nick, was about the appetite for success and about maintaining a hunger to be great, even when you already have achieved it. I know you're not one to talk about self, but I mean, look, seven's more than anybody. And I just wonder if you could explain to me how the appetite and the hunger to continue to be not good at this, but great at this is sustained. Where does that come from?
Well, I you've heard me say before, I hate to lose. And I don't care how much you win, you still hate to lose. Yeah. And you can talk about the seven that we won, but the two that haunt me are the two that we lost. And don't ask me why it's that way. I have a lot of pride in performance and want to try to do the best I possibly can as a coach to have the best program that creates value for the players. I'm talking about value in terms of personal development, academics, and graduating and developing careers off the field, career development, and the football players. I mean, sure. And I think that's one thing that people overlook about the program is we really do try to create value for players, and I think that's why we get a lot of good players.
Well, you stand alone, but you do share a common thread with some of the best coaches and players I've ever talked to in all the years I've done this. It seems that the losses are more memorable and haunt more than the wins. But, my God, you got so many wins to remember, Nick. I certainly hope that as you lay down tonight, you're thinking about the wins and this one, which you and your guys earned, because this was a remarkable team you coached. It seems you were never stressed. I'm sure that wasn't the case, but you made something that's really hard look really easy. And as always, I'm grateful for your time. All the best to you, all right?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Steve, I was mentioning Mom said I asked you a good question. I appreciated the fact that our pal Wright Thompson said he liked the last question because he said that moment where Nick is speechless for just that second is like you got him thinking. But in my mind, I heard Wright saying, I really like the way you asked that last question. That last question you had Saban, he didn't answer you. He was thinking, that's good. That's a good question you asked right there. Wright Thompson, who is still to this day has the greatest quote I've ever heard in my life about Twitter.
The best.
Why would I want to let somebody I don't even know tell me F- you on my phone in my pocket? Thank you, Wright. Someday I'll have the stones to walk away. Until that time, I'm being cussed out by people on Twitter. But I enjoy, and I meant that, Steve. I meant that question to LeBron, and I meant that question to Nick, and I've meant that question to Tiger. The thing about people like them, more so Nick and Tiger because they've got more, is there's when you win that much, I don't know how you don't reach a point where you're like, I'm good, man. Like, I get the process. I get that staying, like, it's a way to not age to a degree. Like, if I can just keep doing this, I don't ever have to get old. And do you ever get sick of winning? No, but how do you stay hungry enough to keep being great? That part legitimately interests me.
Timeout.
Okay.
Timeout.
Yep.
What year are you in NCAA football right now?
I was just going to bring this up.
Oh, God. It's 2042.
Are you tired of winning?
like Wright Thompson, you got me there as I'm pausing to try to No, but I'm tired when I come home from work, and it's that is the best sleeping pill I can take. I fire up a game, we beat the crap out of somebody, and that I throw it to the tight end. This is like our 25th straight year of having number 82, Steve Coughlin, as a tight end. We throw it to you a lot. We feature you. And, you know, then I go to sleep. So here's the difference, Steve, between playing a video game that I can simulate through the defensive part, because you can't get first downs on me anyway. I just blitz all the time. It takes 30 minutes and I'm in and I'm out. Like, I don't have to commit the way Nick Saban has to commit at the 69, 70 years of age to the grind, to all that is involved in the process. Like, that part genuinely interests me. And that's why these guys are different. There is not a satisfaction with being the best. And that's what they are. That's what the SEC is. What is 11 of 14 titles that they've won. And
are you a better play caller than Sark?
It's no, because I have like 7 go-tos. I just run a lot of jet. I run a lot of jet sweeps.
You don't really change personnel a lot. You just go. Just versatile. You're versatile with the guys the 11 you have on the field.
My 11 are on the field. We don't need to situationally substitute. We don't have any packages where we swap. There's none of that. It's not necessary.
Have you ever had 3 of your players finish top 5 in the Heisman? Because I've never had in any of my years playing NCAA 14 at that.
3 of your 5?
Like Nick.
3 of top 5 in the Heisman, though. I've never had 2.
Yeah.
Never 3.
No. No, he's going to have 6 first-rounders this year. There's a little inside the beltway here, because last night with Steve, I said watching Alabama is like watching me play this video game. Like, they're so much better than the people they play. It's just boring. I mean, and Steve, you said it best about their play calling. How'd you put it?
Foot on the gas. He's an absolute assassin.
No, but they can get what?
They can get they can overcome any down and distance there is, and that's why they can call any play on any down.
Makes no difference. They don't get to third down, but then if they do, it's like, whatever. Maybe we'll give it to Najee. Maybe we'll throw it to 6. Waddle's back. Let's give it to him. I don't even know who he is. Some senior running back from Tuscaloosa. He came in running.
Robinson.
Like a rhinoceros. Speaking of Waddle, Steve.
Yeah.
Reminded me of Zion last year. Zion got rolled, that the shoe exploded.
Two,
and everyone.
2 years ago.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
You're right. God, it's been a long time.
I know.
He's out there playing for Duke. His shoe explodes. Everybody wants, you can't play anymore. Well, here's.
Sit out.
It became, the answer to life became not that you could enjoy playing college sports with your team and try to win a title. The only thing you can aspire to is to be compensated as a pro. And that's a great goal. And both Waddle and Zion, as he is now, Waddle will be. But I just wonder, seeing people react to the idea that he was on the field like he shouldn't have been, what do you think of that?
I'm not a fan of that train of thought. I can't imagine how many times Jalen Waddle woke up since getting injured against Tennessee. And the first thing that happens when you get hurt or something like that, when can I come back? When can I come back? And I can guarantee you he had dates circled on his calendar. And then you know what happens? He's a great athlete and he's young and he's an unbelievable specimen of just physical strength and speed. You know what happens? Those guys that get their mind right, they start healing better. And then all of a sudden the date really starts changing. And then it's like, oh my God, the national championship is a possibility. Yes. You know what Jalen Waddle wanted to do? Catch a pass. Maybe catch a touchdown in his final game in the national championship at Alabama. And he did. And it's awesome. He wanted to do it. Nick Saban said he's a game time decision. We're going to watch him in pregame. He has practice. It's his decision on how much he wants to play. Was he limping? Yeah. Is he ever going to forget that night? No. Let the kid do what he wants.
Thank you. It's the reason why they let the big boy Dickerson take that last snap and he carried Saban off the field. It was different because he wasn't put in harm's way. Ohio State understands the dude had blew his knee out. We're not going to try to take him out here and go low. I mean, it's just let him have that moment. But I find that interesting. People's this is why I always defer to you, because I mean,
It's so different now, though, Scott.
But still, as a guy who has had like a jungle gym on his arm to be able to play in the Rose Bowl, I've always soaked up what you've explained about what that meant. And it is, I get it's different now. And I get, look, Waddle's got a paycheck on the other side. You did not.
Well, nice ones.
So we're not saying it's the same thing. But no. the notion of that, people don't understand the Duke Brotherhood, Steve. That's what Zion was a part of, the Brotherhood. Come on, Brotherhood.
I give Zion a lot of credit for coming back and playing, man.
So do I. I joke about the Brotherhood.
I know.
Those guys are there for 3 months.
I know those people. There was people in his camp around him, friends, family, that were telling him, sit. And I'm really happy for him. It was awesome. And it even made me, you want to talk Brotherhood? Last year, All-Star break, you know where Zion went?
Where?
Cameron.
Have some.
Yeah, Brotherhood. Go Duke. They're getting killed tonight.
Yeah, they're.
Vatek plus 2.5 was easy.
Pretty money. They had, college football, though, has a problem. It has a problem. And we knew it watching the game. Like, you're hoping it's going to be good, and then it isn't. And then Devontae Smith gets injured, and the rating is significantly off. Part of it's the world we're in right now. Mm-hmm. No secret that things are a bit sideways. It's an uneasy time in a lot of ways. And that has people's attention understandably focused on larger concerns than football. And the lack of a crowd, I think not having the atmosphere hurts.
Those two crowd fan bases. Oh.
Would have been nuts.
Unreal.
And there's a fatigue larger than that. Because we talk about Power Five conferences, mm-hmm. forget Power Five conferences. There's Power Five teams. It's Alabama, it's Ohio State, it's Clemson, it's Oklahoma, and it rotates. This year it was Notre Dame, it's been Georgia. That's about it. That's mm-hmm. what it is every single year. Now, LSU fans are like, what about us? You too. Like there's like this little rotating thing, and it's obviously it's more than five, but it ain't 20 right now. It's not 20. And so the fix, Steve, for what ails college football is what?
Opportunity. I understand you mentioned the LSU game with Oklahoma. That's a perfect example because last year it was very evident. There wasn't a fourth team that was deserving to be in the same class. Because Tua got hurt, they lost, they were done, they had two losses, and it was Ohio State, it was Clemson, and it was LSU. Maybe Alabama would have put up a better fight than Oklahoma did, but that's where we are. And then Oklahoma goes and gets 70-plus put on them by LSU. Everybody knew that was going to happen. But the problem is, are you going to get more games like that LSU-Oklahoma game if you expand it to 8? Yeah, you're probably going to get more than a couple. But the selling of the idea, the opportunity has to be done.
Agreed.
You can't look at the recruiting rankings, Scott. Like that's why I thought Ohio State had a chance because I knew guys were going to be out, but they have as good of a roster as there is. And Ryan Day's not even come close to losing a beat, maybe even improved things recruiting since Urban left town. And it's Clemson. You know, I say it all the time, but Dabo and Ryan Day, before that Sugar Bowl this year, both of them talked about how when they go to a recruit's house, either one or the other was already there or it was, you know, is coming the next day. They're recruiting against the same guys. Alabama's in that mix.
Yeah, speaking of Alabama recruiting, every single recruit Alabama's ever had under Nick Saban, who stayed for 4 years, has won a title. If I'm Nick Saban, I just walk in and that's what I say. Actually, I don't say that. I say that, and then I say, and we've had a first rounder every single year since 2008. We had four in 17, 18. We didn't have four in 19 because we only had three. Or maybe it's whatever it is, they had lots of them, and they're probably going to have six. So you're probably going to win a title, and you're probably going to go get drafted if you're in that mix of these people, because they're all flirting with the same pretty girl, and she gets to choose which great program she. I just made great players women.
Going back.
Okay.
The idea of the opportunity. Okay. What was it? Cincinnati was eight. If Cincinnati played Alabama, probably not a great game. Seeing what Georgia did beat Cincinnati, and we know what Alabama did to Georgia.
Yeah, they had to come back to do it. It was a hell of a game.
Understood. But whatever. If you want to take that, I'm not saying every team is deserving. Or every team can win the national title that gets in an 18 playoff. But we have to do this, Scott. This is 14 of the last 15 years the champion has come from the Southeast region of the country. Mm-hmm. We just moved to D.C. from an area where no one has ever cared about college football in the Northeast. What are people doing out West? What other interests are? You know, kids are picking up another interest with they can't figure out a team that's won a title in 15 years up in, say, Washington or Pacific Northwest. Or let me look at California. Look at Clemson. They're going recruiting and getting kids out there. Yeah. Najee Harris is from Northern California. Yeah. Like, I don't know how these guys are supposed to recruit against Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State if they can't even sell the idea of playing for a title.
I
get it. It is a lot of it is that those schools' faults because they can't keep up. But to Alabama's sake, like, look how they approached this pandemic, and they should be awarded for that because they did go all in. They did have guys come back, and it's a big, big problem in the sport. But I think you have to expand the playoff and with the idea of selling the opportunity.
Because if you're a power five, if you're a power five team, there's no path, zero, no path. And I look, these guys from the BCS, I'm not going to make an excuse for them. They just go on TV and lie and go, well, of course there's a way to get. No, there's not. No, there's not. Cincinnati has no path. And as much as I appreciate the season that Luke Fickle and his team had. Like, do I think they should have been one of the four? No, they're not one of the four best teams. They're just not. But I don't think. Are they one of the best eight this year? If there would have been eight, yeah, put them in. Because the idea of a chip and a chair, the old saying about the World Series of Poker. Well, you need more than that to win. Because if Cincinnati plays Alabama, the number is massive, and it should be. But if there's no path to a playoff, then what is the point in any of these people playing dress up? And it's like it's a costume party that you're never invited to. So why play dress up? She's like, you, we're not doing this. We're going to form our own thing and we'll do our non-power five playoff. I mean, you're somewhere in between the, what we used to call one and one A or one A and one double A. I mean, there needs to be something that expands it, but the Cincinnati Alabama example is not the best one because after what we just saw Alabama do to Ohio State, neither of us are going to say, well, you know, Cincinnati might have won because neither of us believe it. But I do believe that through the years, some of those teams that were on the fringe that didn't get in, if they got in, would be teams that upset the apple cart. That first year of the playoff, people didn't want Ohio State in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they shouldn't be in. And then what'd they do? They beat Bama and Oregon that year. Remember, there was all that controversy about should they get in? Somebody on the fringes, given the opportunity, would spring an upset. But and unless you open the door just contextually, the idea that USC or Oregon, the winner of the Pac-12, in a year that feels a little bit more normal, a Cincinnati, I don't even know who else, like Oklahoma, there's a bit of Oklahoma fatigue just because we see them keep getting in, and they're like the Big 12 version of Notre Dame. Like, they keep getting there, and they deserve to get there, but then if they get their doors blown off, I mean, really, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson have separated themselves. Alabama this year has put it on another level, but after what LSU did last year, like, there's enough people orbiting that you'd like to see it opened up so that it's not just the same four people every year, because the sport loses if that's all that can make it. You start in August knowing, well, you can pencil in one or two of the finalists. And, you know, I don't want to belabor all. I mean, we can get go down rabbit holes of why that is. Clemson has no opposition. Florida State, Miami have fallen off. And then, you know, as Alabama's got to survive a lot more than most just because the SEC tends to have at least a couple of people in their way. But USC and Oregon falling off hurts. I mean, the Pac-12 hasn't had anybody other than Washington in the past however many years. So, I don't know. We love the sport, but it just needs the key word's opportunity.
Yep. And I just go back one quick second on the idea of these conferences and looking back, and everybody's obviously making fun of the ACC getting two in and then both those teams getting blown out by double digits in this playoff. But look at how top heavy these conferences are now. Like, no one's in Alabama's tier. I'm sorry, in the SEC, nobody. They're in their own tier. I understand. I'm taking Notre Dame out of the ACC now. That was a nice thing that they did for the ACC to help them financially this year.
Well, and it was nice of the ACC to give them a place to play too. It worked out for both.
Yep. But like Clemson, I keep looking at what Mac Brown's doing and building that fast with recruiting and stuff like that. You can't put them in their tier right now. They're in their own tier.
No way.
And you can make the case, at least I think I could, that Ohio State's in their own tier, in their conference, more than Alabama is in the SEC. They're farther ahead of the other Big Ten teams, to me, than Alabama is of the other SEC teams.
I agree with that because Michigan hasn't beaten them under Harbaugh. Penn State under James Franklin's gotten them a couple of times. But here's the other the kicker to that, the magnifier, is where Bama has to deal with Georgia or a Florida on the other side.
Yeah.
If you get to Indy, I mean, look, give Fitzgerald all the credit in the world for Northwestern, but like Northwestern's not Georgia.
No.
That's not what you're facing in a Big Ten title game. And the West, Wisconsin had a nice run, but the West doesn't have enough to make the road as hard for Ohio State. And I know Wisconsin fans are going, hey, we had the lead last year. You did.
Yeah, you guys were terrible this year too, by the way. Remember that Friday night against Illinois when we were supposed to give your quarterback the Heisman? Holy moly. What happened there? So I will say, take Ohio State out of the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is the Pac-12.
What does that mean?
It's very average.
Next. I'm a Big Ten Scotty, and I do not endorse this message.
I got DraftKings prices.
Here we go. We're not doing this again. Last week I put my quarterback ended up in an ambulance. I hope Wolford's okay. Here's what we got this week in the NFL. Rams, Green Bay, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore.
Coming up is better than last weekend. Don't at me.
No, it's a fact. You got old guy quarterbacks in the NFC. You got young guy quarterbacks in the AFC. Kind of an interesting little line in the sand there. Generational stars on one side and the next wave on the other. We had this stat the other night in SportsCenter that four times in the last 20 years, the number one scoring offense met the number one scoring defense in a playoff game. Three different times, the better defense won the game. So the Rams obviously would be the scoring defense. Green Bay would be the number one scoring offense. Mm-hmm. I need to know who's my quarterback from the Rams. I don't know that it matters. More than that, I need to know, is 9-9 going to be on the field? Because he is a force of nature. And if Donald's not right or if he's compromised, then good luck. But the game that's most interesting to you of this weekend's what?
Buffalo, Baltimore.
Who do you like?
Well, I've been thinking about it a lot today. I was looking at some stuff, and they played not last year. I think it was 2018. And Buffalo, was that the MVP year? No, it wasn't the MVP. Maybe it was. I don't know. But just look at, like, there's not really any kind of connection to the teams. And actually, I was looking at all the matchups. There's not really past meetings between the teams that are meeting this week in this round. But just the idea of the quarterback, Scott, like you mentioned, that the quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield's the oldest quarterback in the AFC playoffs left. Think about that. That's nuts.
It's ridiculous.
But I love the idea of Buffalo. There's a hint to me that thinks like you always got to get by one game. You got to survive one game. Was that game theirs last week? The Bills game where they get this thing rolling now? I think they have the goods to win the game. I really do. Baltimore, I think they have to play ahead. I think they have to play ahead and not getting it caught, get down. Because Buffalo, when they get on teams, they pummel them.
You're right.
But the most interesting thing is that Baltimore has a great secondary against that aerial assault of the Bills. And the Bills' defense is not that great against the run. And it's just, contrast of styles, new faces, which I love. And we could get to New Orleans and Tampa. I'm tired of that. But I just – this game has it all. I think Buffalo has enough to win a long, which could be high-scoring game. I just think they're well better set up, but that Baltimore defense is healthy as it's been all year, and you saw that last week.
Two words: snow game. Just makes it better. We got a little
PM snow showers,
little snow front. Whoa. Buffalo, Steve, little snow front, squalls, lake effect.
Squalls, lake effect. What the hell does that mean?
Just say it next day. Just instead of saying wet front, next time it snows, just say lake effect and squalls. I like Baltimore. I like the organizationally, they're more familiar with the stage. They run it well. The key thing you said was the defense for the Ravens is as healthy as it has been. And they got some dudes on that group. And it was interesting how personal that Titans game was. I was shocked that Harbaugh said it was the number one win I've been associated with. I thought to myself, is he forgetting beating his brother in the Super Bowl? Like, imagine having that on your resume and saying, nope, this is the number one win. And it was a bunch of jumping around on the crest in Baltimore and Coach Vrabel. I think it was like, how big a deal is that? And Tennessee beat him there. It's Lamar Jackson having his ability to lead a team to a playoff win questioned. But I just think that the way they're constructed gives them the best chance to go to Buffalo and win. We have praised the Bills throughout, and they earned every bit of that praise. They have been nasty. And Josh Allen's taken a significant step forward. I know you, like a lot of people, were like, I don't know about that dude, man. But gets a little bit loosey-goosey when he needs to be a little more buttoned up. But my God, his talent is staggering. Maybe the most – I mean, if you talk about arm talent, Mahomes is a lot. I think Allen, I don't know.
Me too.
I don't know that he has a peer when it comes to that. But I believe organizationally, fundamentally, in what the Ravens are and a chance to go there and then – in theory, meet Kansas City again, and that's been the Ravens' kryptonite. The Chiefs, we struggle with them lately because they win and they win and they win, and it's like, did you mess around? Or like they've had this sort of they've been bored excuse. I wonder if the Browns aren't in a perfect spot to just go there and absolutely let them hang, man, and just let it rip against a team that sometimes gets a little lackadaisical. They might spot you a few. I'm not saying the Browns get up 28 again. They got gifted a bunch. I just feel like you're totally – I hate you got nothing to lose. You know that, Steve. I hate nothing to lose. Yep. You have the same thing to lose, a playoff game. But you arrive having won a playoff game against a rival, and now you can come in and be like, what up? Let's go. What do you got?
No doubt.
I'm not saying that. I expect Kansas City to win. I just think Cleveland's in as good a spot as they can be to see what happens.
Absolutely. Love the over in that game. I think there's only been 12 playoff games with a higher over. Both teams are built to attack the other team's weaknesses. It really worries me, the Cleveland secondary, even if they get Ward back, because they are not built to stop Kansas City. But you said it. Let's just go in. Let's run our guy Chubb. Kansas City's run defense. Well, I mean, we ran out all over Pittsburgh. Let's go run on Kansas City. And maybe, Myles Garrett could get to Mahomes and cause a couple turnovers. Maybe we get a couple tip balls. But, I mean, the Browns, the way they are, they're awful against tight ends. Kelce is set up for a monster night. And it just – Everybody's waiting for the Kansas City switch to be. I would think you see a really well-played game from Mahomes chomping at the bit to be like, yeah, we were kind of bored. Has that Warriors, Durant, Steph Curry feeling. Here's what we got. But yeah. I think Cleveland has plenty to cover this number, knowing that they're going to be playing catch up, and they got their offense is legit, man, and they got their head coach back. So,
Van Pelt up there dialing up plays. Shout out to Van Pelt, my brother Alex. Good to see him. Good to see him pull that one off.
It was good. AFC games dwarf the NFC games, Scott.
All right, it's time for an important moment in SV Pod. This edition of SV Pod. Where Scott asks Steve this question. Steve, why do you hate the New Orleans Saints?
I am so tired of watching the New Orleans Saints offense. I can't even think of a peer that's in a thing that I have fatigue of. It's the same thing every week, Scott. I mean, I don't understand what – like, am I the only one watching this? It just feels like Drew Brees limits them offensively. I think Michael Thomas is getting super frustrated, and even though he's been back for one game, I see Kamara frustrated on the sidelines when you see him.
He had six touchdowns, won me a fantasy title. He's fine.
And again, Drew Brees had nothing to do with that. Nothing.
What do you want him to do? Give it to seven and play the like act like it's Kansas
State? I want
to
see the ball thrown down the field like a normal NFL offense.
They don't have anyone that can do that. They don't have anyone that can do that.
Come on.
You come on.
I'm tired. Their defense.
Who that say they're going to beat their Saints? Who that? Why you hate the Saints? New Orleans.
I hate watching their offense. That's right. I don't hate the Saints. I love their defense. Love their fans. But
they don't love you.
Yeah, they do. I can't stand watching their offense. Okay. And I think the world's going to have Tampa, and I'm going to have to end up taking New Orleans.
You're going to hate that the Saints for your lungs. There you go. This is what I deal with. I got all of that, and guess who he's going to have? He's going to have the Saints, because you're right. Everybody likes Tampa.
Hey, it can't be worse. I gave out Trey Sermon over receptions in the national title game. He got hurt on the first play.
Not great. No. All right. We started by me rambling about Donald against
– oh, yeah. Do you think they have any chance?
No.
I do.
I mean, I do. You know what? Honestly, I do, because defensively, I think I their defense is enough to make it hard on make it difficult on Rodgers. You got to stop yourself because you hear the seventh grade version of you in the back of the class go, you just said hard on. Makes it difficult on Rodgers. Weather, who the hell knows? I didn't look at that. I only looked at the Buffalo weather to see snow showers.
Cold. I see cold. Squalls.
But, like, okay, so Wofford was in an ambulance last week.
Mm-hmm.
Goff's right thumb looks like Fred Flintstone's big toe. Like, he just had surgery. Like, it's going to be freezing. How can you squeeze the ball? I can't picture how offensively they're going to do enough. But, I mean – so could their defense keep him in it, a turnover here and there? Sure, but you can't, like, game plan for that. You can't plan for that. So,
nope.
I could see lower scoring. I could see – what are they getting?
It's 6.5.
Oh, see, I love that.
Yeah, I know you do.
So, Green Bay in a close game.
Okay. Who are you more confident in covering, Kansas City or Green Bay?
Kansas City. Because I think – because I could see – everything that went right for Cleveland imploding. Because against a team like Kansas City, even Steve, if you play like a good quarter, in 10 minutes of game time, Kansas City, we saw them do it against Miami. They had a double-digit lead, and then they were up like by 18 points in like 10 minutes of game time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would just absolutely feel – I feel like Kansas City's ceiling and capacity to score like 41 is higher than Green Bay's. In given the circumstance, given who you're playing against,
totally understand.
So more confident to cover Kansas of the ones, Kansas City for sure.
Yeah, really interested to see Kansas City's defense here, just because Cleveland has good balance. You know, I also you watched the game last Saturday, Buffalo Indy, right? They said Buffalo allowed 6,000 people in there.
Steve, it's Buffalo, the Bills Mafia, it's like dog years, like 6,000 Buffalo people.
So they had 26,000 there.
No, dog years are 7. So 6,000 Buffalo Bills Mafia people is equivalent to 42,000 normal humans.
Oh, okay.
There's this, and I mean this with love, there's like this mutant gene in the Bills Mafia that gives them the ability to be louder, drink more, and be impervious to flames. There's a mutated gene in the Bills Mafia that makes them the special people that we love so much.
I am definitely biased in what I'm rooting for, and it has to do with the Bills Mafia, but a Bills Browns AFC title game would be epic.
Because it guarantees a great story for a Super Bowl representative out of the AFC.
And absolute heartache on the other side that says we got to play so-and-so in the AFC title and we still couldn't beat them.
And let's end it with this. Two fan bases that Vegas would establish a line of pick 'em and who could absolutely get obliterated celebrating the win obliterated to take the pain off the loss. Like Browns fans, Cleveland people, Browns fans capacity, Bills Mafia, like literally. Pick them.
I'll take Cleveland.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's because the public would hammer Bills Mafia because we've seen them jumping off buses on tables and all the rest of that nonsense. So let's end it there.
Who do you think has a bigger fan base? Buffalo?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think so because they had that stretch there. It's been a long time, but you go to 4 Super Bowls in a row, like people that lingers for a little bit longer. Cleveland fans are, I don't feel like they're as apt to let you know it where Bills Mafia is. What do you think?
I think it's Buffalo because it's closer to Canada.
What does that mean?
They have fans in Canada where Cleveland is right on the lake and Pittsburgh's closer. And we know how big Pittsburgh's fan base is. Like there's a lot of Pittsburgh fans that live in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Pittsburgh fans that live everywhere.
Yeah. So Canada, dude, it goes all the way up around the North Pole. Like there's Bills fans that go way north.
In review, as we conclude this edition of SB Pod, Canada, it goes way up, all the way up. And that's why there's more Bills fans because of the Canadian geography. And again, if you've gotten to the end of this, God bless you. We just kind of run out of
time. I have one question.
Wait. Bonus content. Scott on the spot.
Yeah.
Pew, 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 pew.
Who do you think is?
Spit it out.
Who are the top 3 quarterbacks in DraftKings Daily Fantasy? Most expensive.
This week?
Yes, this week.
Mahomes?
He's 1.
Allen?
He's 3.
It's either Jackson or Brady. Brady's playing a better defense. Jackson.
Correct.
Huh?
Rodgers is 4, Brady is 5.
And Breeze, who Steve hates, remember New Orleans, that was Steve that was saying those hateful things about you. He does not like your offense.
Wolford's 10.
Go get him. Hope you're healthy, kid.
Go Wake Demon Deeks.
Go Deeks. That's the end of the podcast.